HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes. A weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 45, recorded Wednesday, January 3rd, 2007. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible template-based code generator for .NET. Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100 online at codesmithtools.com. And by Slash N Software Red Carpet Subscriptions, the most comprehensive solution for adding connectivity to your .NET and ASP.NET application. With components for every major internet protocol, online at www.nsoftware.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine, online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl discuss programming language extensibility.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes from HanselMinutes.com. I'm here with Scott Hanselman. We're back from a long period of hiatus. Scott, you were in Tanzania, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I was in Arusha, Tanzania, just a couple of hours west of Mount Kilimanjaro.
So what were you doing there?
My wife's from Zimbabwe. We go to Africa every year to visit family. We usually go to Zimbabwe or South Africa, but my wife, her sister-in-law works at the Rwandan War Crimes Tribunal, which is in Arusha, because Rwanda is just to the west of Tanzania, right next to Burundi. So she works for the War Crimes Tribunal for the UN, and we wanted to go visit her, and we ended up having kind of a informal family reunion. Mo is number four of seven kids, and we ended up getting quite a few kids up there at the same time.
Wow. And this is near the big mountain, Kilimanjaro, right?
Yeah, it is. We actually got a chance to go to Kilimanjaro as well, but we're not really climber types. And since we took Zenzo, our 13-month-old, with us, which was interesting on a 25-hour flight, by the way, just kind of went to the base and looked around. But it was cool. We were there for a month. We hung out for Christmas, learned Swahili, and generally had a good time. It took my parents, too, their first time anywhere, first time on a plane, first time out of the country. Well, I think actually they went to Mexico once, but I don't think that counts. That's just South San Diego.
So how do you say I'm a VB programmer in Swahili?
I don't know.
All right, okay.
I don't know. You could nijifunza nitaka ujifunza VB programmer.
Wow. You actually attempted that.
I think that means I want to learn to be a VB programmer, but I was only there a month.
Wow. It's still impressive. So what are we talking about today, Scott?
Well, we wanted to get back into the programming way of doing things, and I think that the programming shows are the best. That's what we're good at. We're programmers. And I was looking at this white paper that was up, kind of a throwaway thing buried inside of the announcement that Microsoft released support for Iron Python. Remember a while back, Iron Python was developed, basically an implementation of Python that would compile to IL, to intermediate language. And they released Iron Python for ASP.NET. And we had done that one show on dynamic languages, right? And then, John Lamb, who's at iunknown.com, John Lamb, who created Ruby CLR. Exactly.
Right.
That's that bridge between Ruby and the CLR. It's kind of like com interop in the sense that actual Ruby code, not Ruby compiled to IL, but actual interpreted Ruby code could call .NET objects and talk to compiled .NET objects, as well as use things like inline C#. He's moving to Redmond.
Yeah, we knew he went to go join the firm, but I didn't know he was moving. That's pretty.
Yeah, so he emailed me a couple of days ago asking where he should bank, right? Because I'm a banker type. So he says, "Where should I bank? I'm moving," because he's from Canada.
Yeah.
So I said, bank at First Technology Credit Union. It's Microsoft Credit Union, blah blah blah. And then I started thinking about this. He's going to move to work on the CLR team as a program manager, and he's all about Ruby, and he wouldn't make a move like that unless he was serious about something. And you and I had talked a little bit in the dynamic languages show about that Microsoft's clearly starting to think about dynamic languages. So I'm looking at this release of Iron Python, and there's this really great white paper. I think you probably have a link for it I sent you, by a guy named David Ebo. It's buried in the middle of the announcement. It's just at asp.net/IronPython. And it's a white paper on the new dynamic language extensibility model for ASP.NET. Now, I love the CLR team. I love the .NET Framework team. But don't you ever get the feeling that there's always some really cool innovation going on in the ASP.NET team?
Absolutely.
Like, ASP.NET primarily pushes the .NET Framework.
Yeah.
If they're doing something crazy, I mean, think about all the different things ASP.NET has influenced. IIS 7.
Yep.
You know, is so much different from IIS 6 and IIS 5 because of what the ASP.NET team continues to do. You know, Ajax, when micro, you know, things like, well, gosh, what they're doing in the new version of Outlook Web Access, you know, they always have to come down to the ASP.NET team and see, well, what kind of creative things can you come up with?
Yeah.
So, you know, ASP.NET and even classic ASP before always supported some kind of an extensibility model, right? If you create a language, you make Carl Lang as a third-party vendor that makes compilers, you know, you could certainly use that for ASP.NET.
Right.
Right. You go into the page and you'd say language equals whatever, Carl Lang, and you'd be able to do that. But that's assuming that your language would actually compile into IL at compile time and be a real assembly. But there's statically typed languages, statically compiled languages rather, like C sharp, and then there's more dynamic languages like Python and like Ruby. So they changed ASP.NET in order to allow this extensibility model. And this this white paper I thought was so interesting that I thought we should kind of run through it, right?
Now, how did they change? Did they change ASP.NET for the next version, or is this a service pack, or what? How is it going to change?
Well, it appears that they've basically, they're using this for an ASP.NET 2.0, and they've kind of spot welded into it. They're basically hacking into their own thing. This white paper is really interesting. It's worth reading. It's only about 8 pages.
Okay.
And they talk about, you know, some of the techniques they have in ASP.NET that we'll go over, and what they did to weld in, and then where they saw that there were weaknesses. And it's pretty clear that the point is that this is early, right? I'm gleaning here. I don't know anything. No one's told me any secrets.
Right.
I'm not saying anything that's under NDA. I'm just looking at stuff that you can find on the net, and I am speculating. So I'm speculating that they're so deeply interested in ASP.NET that they're kind of doing this proof of concept to think about what we could do to make dynamic languages a better experience under ASP.NET, right?
Okay.
Now, we had some discussions and some feedback after the dynamic languages show about early binding, late binding, dynamic typing, static typing, duck typing. We will leave people to go and listen to that show again, some of the things we got right, some of the things we didn't. So we're not going to talk about whether we think dynamic languages are better or static typing is better. We're just going to kind of speak about here's what's happening, okay?
Sure.
So Iron Python is an implementation of Python for the CLR, and it's really very good. It's considered very good at some of the Python conferences. They did some tests because there's a standard test suite when someone wants to implement Python, and it's very fast. It's very fast. And a lot of people like Python. People say that Ruby feels a lot like Python. If you look at the language Boo, B-O-O, that we've talked about before, it feels a little bit like Python with a C-sharp twist. So, you know, Python's a language that's been around for a long time that is very comfortable to a lot of people, and the idea that someone might want to write pages in Python is pretty obvious. Certainly right now, most people write their ASP.NET pages in C#, and we usually call C# first among equals, because there's, you know, it's like, what is it, 70% C# and 30% VB, something like that. Do you know what the numbers are?
No, I don't know.
It's something like that. I mean, VB is a first-class language, and C# is just kind of a little bit more first class, because every once in a while something will be released and they'll only support C#.
Well, you know, you don't want to give people the wrong impression. Most of the time it's because the examples are in C#, because what comes out of Redmond is mostly comes from C# developers. But it all eventually gets VBized.
Right, absolutely. Microsoft recognizes that choice is important. You know, and as much as we say things like this language and that language are syntactic sugar and they're just different skins on the same underlying thing, they each have things that are kind of unique to them. But it's always just been those two languages. So it appears that Microsoft's trying to work towards more choice, which is always a good thing. But it's not just picking other languages to do this work in, but it's also languages that are fundamentally different than what people were expecting when they designed stuff. So let's talk about kind of how the existing ASP.NET model works, right? So let's say that you have an ASPX page, right, that's sitting on the file system and it's got some code in it. You know, ASP.NET will parse that page, that ASPX page, and then look at all of the different things that exist within it. It might have some declarative markup, like, you know, the HTML, body tags, meta tags, things like that. It may include some server controls that it's going to go have to get and resolve. And then it may have code snippets. Now, a lot of people put their code in code behinds, but there's still some value in putting your code in code snippets that are in line in the ASPX page, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then ASP.NET, you know, creates this code DOM tree, right? The code DOM is literally that. It's a document object model representing code. One time we'll talk about how you can use the code DOM to generate your own code. We use this to make serializers. The XML serializer internal to the .NET framework uses the code DOM to represent this. So ASP.NET is making a language-independent tree to derive from system.web.page, and it's going to describe the markup. So it takes the declarative markup and all the different angle brackets and then express that in a code DOM. All right, we're just translating declarative to procedural. So if you go and you say angle bracket B, close bracket, hello, and then close B, just some literal text, that eventually is going to turn into a response.write call with your text expressed as a string literal. So that's being generated after the parsing. So you get this tree that represents this DOM. This is not yet compiled. So then ASP.NET will pick a code DOM provider. There's one for VB, there's one for C#. And based on that language attribute that we talked about, that language equals quote VB or C#, that appears in the page directive. And then they're going to go and say, hey, provider, generate source code given this code DOM tree. We've described constructs that are in basically IL in this code DOM, and we'll go and generate that source code. Might be in C#, might be in VB, depends on what you're doing with that page directive. And then it goes and it compiles that into a DLL, you know, a temporary DLL. You've seen these in ASP.NET. And it actually does that by launching the compiler, right? You can hit a page in ASP.NET and actually see the VB compiler, the C# compiler firing off in the background. Same thing happens right when you're doing XML serializers and stuff like that. And then, of course, the generated assembly gets loaded and then gets run, right? And all of that code gen stuff only happens once, the very first time you hit the page. And that's why we always have to hit ASP.NET pages ahead of time, unless we've done all the work ahead of time.
Right.
Okay. That's basically how it works. And, you know, in partial classes instead of derivation in ASP.NET 2.0, but the general gist is about like that. So there is a thing in ASP.NET that no one uses but the SharePoint team called no compile pages. Okay. And they're literally just that. They're pages that are totally driven by data. They don't have any compilation at all. They don't get any code, right? This is basically pages that are static HTML and server controls. But, you know, the SharePoint team thought that would be useful. And just like I said, all the different teams within Microsoft kind of put pressure on the ASP.NET team to innovate, to do different things. And it allowed SharePoint to scale considerably when there were times that you didn't need to do compilation. Okay.
Okay.
So this no compile model exists, and basically that just does some parsing, builds this tree, and executes it. As long as the page doesn't change, everything works just fine. So they've got these two different models for ASP.NET pages, right? You've got one that requires compilation statically ahead of time, and you've got one that doesn't require compilation, but of course it's no compile, so you don't get any code. So what these guys needed when they wanted to do a dynamic language was a model that doesn't necessarily cause static compilation, but still lets the page have code. Because once a page gets compiled and turned into a DLL in ASP.NET, it doesn't exactly get released, right? I mean, these DLLs hang out for a long time because they get compiled and they're real DLLs in the temporary ASP.NET files folder, and they sit there and they don't really go away. until you shut down and start over again. So what they did was apparently in ASP.NET 2.0, there was a thing called the page parser filter. I didn't know this existed. This is apparently part of the very, very beginning step when we parse the page. And they wanted what they changed to make this work was this parser.
So this was an entry point that existed that had been previously untapped.
Exactly. You've nailed it.
And it's very early on in the process.
Yeah. And I don't know if they may do it another way, right? But this is part of the no compile feature. This is a piece that they basically said, oh gosh, you know, because you imagine them having this conversation, like, what exactly are we going to hook into to make this happen? And that was, you know, that's a challenge. So what they did was they made a new page parser filter. So with the no compile pages, you go into your page directive and you say compilation mode equals never. You can, you know, with ASP.NET and with most of .NET, you can basically plug in anything you want. So in your web.config, you go in and you can say in the pages section,
right?
You can go and say page parser filter type and then put your own, which is cool. You can put your own page parser filter. You basically override the existing one and do whatever you want. So they wrote one that customized the parsing behavior and then actually allowed code in these quote unquote no compile pages. So basically, if the page uses a dynamic language, and in this example, this proof of concept that they're doing, it's just IronPython, they will make sure that the page inherits from a custom base class because they've basically created their own base class that is going to allow this stuff to happen. So they've hooked in two different places here. And here's the cool part. If the parser, right, finds a code snippet, remembering that these are not allowed in no compile pages, right?
Right.
No compile pages only support markup or server controls. So if the parser finds a code snippet, these are the little things like angle bracket, percent, you know, it actually replaces the snippet at parsing time with a special control that holds the code.
Huh.
I mean, that's just, it's horrible, but it's brilliant. Just drink it in, right? You got this model, don't allow code, but we do allow server controls. When you see a code snippet, you yank it out, you wrap it around, and no one knows the better. So basically, as my boss, Chris Brooks, always says, that any problem in computer science can be solved by one additional layer of indirection.
Right.
So they've added their own indirection. So from the point of view of ASP.NET, as it says here in the white paper, there is no code. The snippet becomes a control that happens to have a string property with the code.
And that's all you need for that.
Well, yeah. So then they basically have an HTTP module that lets them get in early in the environment and in the cycle as the app domain gets loaded. And they can get all of their different modules loaded up ahead of time. And they have this custom base class called script page that basically derives from the standard page class. And having those base classes, both the module and for the base class for all their pages, gives those pages a better way to interact with the lifecycle and make things fit together. The flow of this show is going based on this really great white paper. So I'm kind of going on the high level.
I've got a few questions, probably as do you.
No. Go ahead.
And I'm not sure you'll be able to answer them, but my first question that comes to mind is how is the rest of the page lifecycle affected by this? If you're compiling in the parser stage, does it then get plugged back into the? It has to plug back into the rest of the lifecycle. So, is there another level of compilation that happens at the normal compilation time for the things that aren't dynamic?
Yeah, it's a good question. What they do is this page parser filter, the one that they've replaced, what it does is it sees a code snippet and it replaces the snippet with a special control. And the control just holds the code because in the no compile model, you're allowed to have markup and server controls.
All right.
So they squirrel away the code and then later on when their page becomes their special base class gets instantiated, they've got a whole tree of controls that they can go and then themselves dynamically compile using the IronPython compiler, IronPython techniques. See, in the code DOM, right, when you use the code DOM model, the standard model, all the user code on the page shows up inside of that ultimately generated source code file. But in this model, all of the code is going to be kind of separate, and they're going to be able to compile that themselves. There's nothing that is preventing them from doing that compilation themselves.
Okay.
So the dynamic languages, they've just basically taken the compilation phase, not of the entire page, but just of the Iron Python portions, and they've moved it farther along in the life cycle.
Very cool.
So the part that's a little confusing, it took me a while to get my head around, is that they're using this no-compile feature of ASP.NET, but they're simply using it as a hook to control the compilation themselves. So this doesn't mean that the dynamic languages are being interpreted. It just means that they're being compiled at a different time by different folks, right?
Yeah.
It's not the code DOM static compilation. It's the dynamic code that's being compiled on the fly by their engine.
It's kind of a nice hack.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clever. They've got it working with snippets. They've got it working with data binding expressions. They're doing different things to make doing things called dynamic injection. So one of the things that's really cool about dynamic languages are it's like, for example, if you wanted to get something out of the query string, right, in C#, right now you would say, you know, string foo equals request dot query string, and then angle bracket, you know, bracket, quote, whatever, and you'd pull that thing out of the query string. But in a dynamic language, because it's being interpreted, it's supposed to be interpreted later, it's compiled later, you might just say request dot foo. Even though foo doesn't really exist as a property on the request object,
right?
You can interpret that later. So what they do is they register the thing called an injector that basically says, if you see something like this in this form, where in this example, where the request, where this object is a request object, but there's no property, you know, basically you're basically doing what's called method missing in Ruby. So if there's a car object and I go car.drive, but the car object doesn't actually have a drive method,
they just yank that out and store it away for later.
Exactly.
After they add the method, right?
So you can go and make things like finding controls in a tree, where you go like control.findControlFoo. Here now in something like a dynamic language, whether it be Iron Python or something else, you would say, you know, control dot and then the name of the child control, and then the injector method would automatically inject the appropriate intent. So what this means isn't just, oh, gee, we get to express things as in dynamic languages, but that we can express our intent more clearly, right? And this is what link and delink are all about, and we'll talk more about those in another show. So all of this just adds up, you know, what does this mean to you as a VB programmer and me as a C# programmer? This just means they're pushing the envelope, and there's language guys inside of Microsoft, and this is why I brought up John Lamb, is that I know John personally. He's a friend of mine. He is deeply interested in making it easier to express your intent as a programmer to the computer. That's like what he believes. And he thinks that Ruby's like the language that God would write if God could write programming languages. and I can't help but think that when they move, when they're doing these kinds of things, these thought experiments like this Iron Python for ASP.NET, and then you get guys like John moving to Microsoft, that that something's cool is going to happen. And I think that
something's definitely going to happen.
You know, C# 3.5, 3.5, or whatever the next version is going to be with link, D-link, with this. It might take a while to get the tooling going on, but something's cool happening. And it's not going to be always just C languages, right? They've been with us for years, but it's going to be something else. Might be 10 years from now. It might be 5 years. I don't know. But this white paper, I really thought was a harbinger of things to come. And I would encourage people to check it out. I don't know if you'd put it in production or not, but it sure is interesting to think about.
Well, and until something cool actually does happen, you can listen to Scott and I thinking about it here every week on Hansel Minutes. And Scott, thanks a lot. This has been a great show.
Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot.
We'll talk to you next week on Hansel Minutes.